or ruch, in terms of grammar, would be, let's say again, broken. Broken means something broke it. Paid means someone paid it. Completed, as he said, means someone completed it. So baruch, if the verb means to bless, baruch would mean something bless it. In English, you translate it blessed.
The trouble is nobody talks that way anymore, so nobody knows what it means in English either.
Blessed means you received a blessing. You received a blessing. Something blessed it. To say it is blessed means something blessed it. Okay, now, when we say a blessing, and we start off Baruch, who are we talking about? We're talking about God, right? So, Baruch is going to mean someone, something blessed God? What would that mean? Well, what does it mean to bless? To give a blessing to cause a blessing to? Let's start with the noun. What is a blessing? What kind of thing is a blessing? A blessing is something that's really good for you. We have in English the phrase, a blessing in disguise. What does that mean? It means that when you got it, you thought it was bad. You thought it was destructive. But you're getting hurt by it. That's a blessing in disguise. It means, I didn't see that really it was good for me, beneficial. So blessing is something that's really beneficial. To bless someone is to give him something beneficial, to give him a blessing. Or to wish him something good, if he's speaking it out, wishing him something good. Now if I say, Baruch Atah Hashem, you Hashem are Baruch, that would mean that someone, something, gave Hashem a blessing. Gave Hashem something that's really good for him. Really good for him. Now, this is a pretty difficult idea. Does God need anything? That we should give him something that's good for him? Can anyone give God something that's good for God? I mean, it's a very funny idea. So, other commentators want to get out of it and translate the word differently. One translation, based on other usages, is praised. Good. You can do that, if you have to. The Rashba Nien Yaakov says that Baruch means source of blessing. Not blessed, but the one who gives blessing. That's gold, of course. God gives all blessings. The trouble now will be the grammar. What do you mean? Shavur means broken. Not the thing that breaks other things. So here my daughters, who know grammar exquisitely, if you grow up in Yerushalayim, you go to Beis Yaakov, spent 4 years learning grammar. Boy, do they know it backwards and forwards. If I have any trouble with grammar, I gotta call up my daughters and they put me on the right track. So they said to me that Baruch can be understood like this. You know, Rachu means merciful. Merciful means the one who gives mercy. Hanu means the one who is gracious, acts in a gracious way. Baruch should be understood like Rachum El Chanun. You'll tell me, but Rachum El Chanun have a Pasach, Rachum, Chanun. Baruch has a comment, it's Baruch, not Baruch, it's Baruch. So he said, that's true, but you see in Hebrew, if you have a Pasach in front of a Resh, the Pasach turns into a comment. So really you ought to be Baruch. That's the way it ought to be pronounced. But whenever you have a pasuk in front of a resh, it becomes a comment. So in grammar, it could be like Rachum Elchanan. That's another way out. That's gold. Because Baruch was the source of blessing. The truth is that the first pshat, which the Nefesh HaChaim says, the first pshat that God receives blessing is also true. And the two fit together into one picture. And that, I think, is what Baruch is trying to teach us. Let's try to understand how the first pshat could be right. That God is blessed, receives blessing being something good. throughout the Torah, the Tanakh, the Midrash, the Talmud, the Siddur, Kadosh Baruch Hu is described as wanting things. He has plans. He has projects. He has goals. He has purposes. When things happen well, then he rejoices. When things happen poorly, he's angry or upset, regrets what he's done. Now, you all know that we can't take this literally. That's anthropomorphism. That's treating God as if he were a person. God doesn't have eyes, he doesn't have arms, he doesn't have ears, doesn't have legs, and doesn't really have emotions like that, and so forth and so on. That's anthropomorphism. That's not really true. No. So what do? Throw it away? Think how much of the Tanakh talks about that. Reishis, Shmos, Devarim. Passage after passage, paragraph after paragraph, talks about what Kadosh Baruch Hu was happy about and angry about and upset about and regrets. And the Midrash and the Talmud. So you say, well, it's not literally true. Okay, got it. It's not literally true. So what do I do now? Throw it away? You can't throw it away. These are Kisei HaKodesh, holy writings. So the answer is that on one level they're not true, but on another level they are true. They're not just throwaway. What they describe is what Kodesh Baruch Hu does, what his purposes are in doing it, what of himself he shares with us. Even if it isn't the totality of what he is, it's what he shares with us. This is a picture that he gives us. The picture doesn't describe what he really is, but it isn't false either. It's as much of it as we can understand. For that part that we understand, for that part that he shows us, the picture is really true. So what do? We operate with the picture because he told it to us. He wants us to operate with the picture. But we never forget that this is just a picture for us to operate with. You know, you'll have, let's say, a six-year-old who says, I turn on the light switch and the light goes on. Why does it happen under me? What is there that, what's the switch got to do with the light? It's a six-year-old. So you could say, well, listen, you know there's a wire. There's something that runs through the wire and makes the light hot. You turn on the switch, it runs. Electricity, slow electricity, it runs through the wire. The six-year-old might begin to worry. Suppose the light bulb is not in the socket. If I turn on the switch, is that stuff going to run through the wire and leak into the room? Because it's running through the wire, and it hasn't got any place to go out. So it'll leak into the room, and it could be dangerous. Just better make sure there's a bulb in there all the time. Or if the bulb is out, don't turn the switch on. James Thurber, who was a noted writer in the 20th century, said that his mother, who lived at the time when electricity was first becoming popular, she really believed that. And she was very, very careful not to turn on the light switch because electricity is running through the wire. It's got to go someplace to go. So what are you doing? You're giving the 6-year-old a picture. There's stuff going through the wire and makes the lights shine. That's sort of true. It's sort of true. There is electricity in the wire, right? It does run through the wire. But no, it's not like a tube carrying water where, you know, if it's running, there's no place for it to go. It'll leak into the room. It's not sort of like that. It's sort of different from it. So what are you telling the 6-year-old? You're not lying to the 6-year-old. You're giving him a picture. Is it a picture that's right? Sort of right. It's right on some level. It's just not 100% accurate as to what the reality really is. So here too, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us a picture and he says, this picture is good enough for you to operate with. And it's true. On one level, it's true. It just doesn't give you the whole picture or a completely accurate picture of the ultimate reality. Okay, so now let's operate with that picture. In that picture, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I have goals. I created the world, not like certain Avodah Zarah says, for play, with all of the ups and downs of the world. It's just God's play. That's what they say in the Far East. No, I have a purpose for it. I have a goal. I want it to be moved forward, and here are the ways that's going to be moved forward. No, if he has a goal, and I can do something to help that goal come true, then I'm doing something that's good for him. Anyone has a goal. He can do something that's good for him if he helps that goal come true. If he helps that goal be achieved. So yes. Yes, indeed. We could do something good for him. If he describes himself to us with a picture, and that picture says he has a goal, and we do something to move the goal forward, then we have done something good for him. So we can really give blessing to God. We could really do that. I want you to know, the Talmud says, Eidu Chosid, who is a Chosid? Again, maybe, shouldn't think of the Strauss. Who is a Chosid? And the Talmud answers, Hamischasid im Kono. Someone who does chesed for God. Now what does it mean to do chesed? It means do good for someone. To give somebody something good. That's what chesed means. So here, the chosid is a person who thinks of God and says, what does God need? What does God want? What are his goals? And does something to move those goals forward. Okay. So now, we are doing chesed with God. We're giving blessing to God by doing what he wants, doing what will move his goals forward. Now, what's his goal? His goal is to bless us. That's his goal. He created the whole of the creation in order to do good to us. So, on the surface, I'm going to go a little more deeper in a moment, but on the surface, what you have here is a relationship of mutual blessing. We're giving blessing to him, and he's giving blessing to us. And that's why both Pshatim are right. Boruch can mean blessed, recipient of blessing, and Boruch can mean source of blessing. They're both true. He receives blessing from us, and we receive blessing from him. He wants to do good for us. He wants to provide us with good. But the best good, the greatest good, will happen only if we earn it, only if we deserve it. So he says to us, listen, my children, I want to do good for you. I want to benefit you. But the greatest benefit will be if you earn it. So please, I'm asking you, earn it so I can give it to you. Now if I earn it, I'm benefiting him because I'm enabling him to do what he wants to do. He wants to give it to me when I earn it. So in the end, I'm giving him a blessing and he's giving me a blessing. Are you with me? With me so far? Okay. One more twist, and then I'll finish with Baruch. Why is it better if I earn it? I'm going to give you an answer. I hope it satisfies you. Sort of. I sort of hope it satisfies you. If it doesn't, I'll have to decide whether I should go much deeper. You know there's a mitzvah of tzedakah, giving charity. There are lots of different ways to give charity. The Rambam has 8. What is the most perfect form of charity, the highest form of charity, the best way to give somebody charity?
Doing the job.
Even better than anonymous charity, where nobody knows anybody, is giving them a job. Number 7 is doing it anonymously. The giver doesn't know the recipient doesn't know the giver. Giving a job is better. Now let's figure out why that would be. Why would number 7 be doing it anonymously? What's good about doing it anonymously? Can you? Number 1, that's good. You get nothing out of it. If he knows who you are, so then the one you give to, so he owes you and he feels indebted to you, and you could be doing it and counting on him to pay you back. If not, then it's good that way. What about if you don't know who he is? Same thing. You don't get arrogant, or you don't look at him that way. Good. What about from the point of view of the recipient? In other words, if I ask, why is it a better gift for him if he doesn't know who gave it to him? Your remark is right. He pointed out why it's better for me. It's better for my nidos. It's better for me as a person that I shouldn't know who I gave it to. That way I can't get any return out of it. I can't get any benefit out of it myself. Why is it better for him?
He won't feel embarrassed.
Oh. He won't feel embarrassed when he comes in front of me. Because if he knows that he's took a free gift for me, then he always feels that he depended upon me. So the gratitude comes with embarrassment. Now watch. Here's something very important and not obvious at all. Watch. In the eighth level, the best level, where you give somebody a job, he knows you and you know him. You definitely know each other. Is there embarrassment there? This is fascinating. You give somebody a job, he works the week, you pay him for his work, and there's no embarrassment. Is a job a valuable thing to have? You know people who are out of work? You know what it means, how devastating it is? It's the most horrible thing, one of the most horrible things in the world, not to have work. So you give somebody a job, you take them something very precious, and there's no embarrassment. That's something really interesting. You gave him a precious gift, and he's not embarrassed by getting it. Because, at the end of the day, he worked for it. The money he gets, he worked for. And usually, when you pay a worker, you don't pay him what he made, the profit he made for you. I don't know, but there's plenty left over, and that's why you hired him. So, each one is benefiting, and nobody's getting a free ride. The beauty of giving someone a job is you can give him something very precious and cause no embarrassment. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to do the same kind of charity. I want to benefit you. I created you so I can give you something good. But I don't want you to be embarrassed by it. So I'm creating you and I'm giving you the opportunity to earn it. So that when you get it in the end, you'll be able to say, I earned it. It belongs to me. Yes, he gave me a free gift of a job. But in the end, the benefit that I get is I earned. So the benefit I get, I'm not embarrassed by. So I'm full of gratitude, I'm not embarrassed. That's a great, great thing. So that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu said, I want you to be able to earn it. That's why we have this world with mitzvos in it. So we can earn it. We go to Olam Haba, we're not embarrassed by what we get. So it's a world, this world is a world of mutual blessing. We give to him the opportunity to give us the best possible good. With me so far? That's skimming the surface of the first word. Okay. Second word. Yeah.
If Hashem gains by giving us, doesn't that hint that he's someone incomplete, if he has the ability to gain?
Yes. And I think that's right, insofar as we're describing the Kodesh Baruch Hu, we're describing him as having a goal that is not yet established or accomplished, then there definitely is an incompleteness. There's an incompleteness because the goal is not yet fulfilled. And in that respect, that is how he's describing himself. And that's no different from all the anthropomorphisms that we started with at the beginning, where he describes himself as being happy about this and upset about that and regretting that. They're all anthropomorphisms. They're not ultimately true. Just like the electricity flowing through the wire, which is like water through a pipe, is not ultimately true. But it's not ultimately false either. It has some truth to it, and we're supposed to operate with that truth. And that's why I said what I said in the introduction. Okay? Next word, ato. One of the Chassid Rebbe said this is the most difficult word in the entire Shemoneh Esrei to say. You. Because ato means you're talking to someone. You're not talking about someone, you're talking to someone. And you can only be talking to someone who's there. You're supposed to feel yourself, picture yourself, so to speak, face to face with God. You're supposed to feel being in His presence. Before the throne of glory, say Chazal. Ramchal puts it this way. The goal of all Jewish life is Dveikus. Dveikus, it's not just the name of a band, popular Jewish music. Dveikus means connection, attachment. In modern Hebrew, devik is
glue.
Dvekas means, so to speak, being,
so to speak, the glue to Kadosh Baruch Hu,
connected. That, to achieve that, you have to be very great. Very great. The highest level of Dvekas is prophecy. We don't have prophecy anymore. You have to be extraordinary and very great. But Baruch Hu offers us 3 times a day free Dvekas. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be so special. 3 times a day, the Baruch Hu says, listen, the door is open. Come to me. I'm ready for you. I'm waiting for you. And I'll be available to you in prayer. Then when you leave, you go back to wherever you were. But 3 times a day, you get a taste of what it's like. If you take out the Shulchan Aruch and look at the laws of prayer, it reads something like the popular idea of meditation. Shulchan Aruch says you concentrate on being in front of the Kodesh Baruch Hu to the point where you forget about your physical surroundings and you forget about the goof, about the body. You're in a spiritual state, almost a spiritual trance, although you're conscious, you're fully conscious and controlled. You're saying words one after the other, you're thinking the words as you go. But your feeling is that your neshama, your soul, is relating to the reality of the Kodesh Baruch Hu in a way that the rest of what's going on is left behind. But the Baruch Hu says, I'm available to you. I'm available to you in feeling. For a kind of vacus. Now the Atah expresses that. The person should pause a little bit. And he says, Atah, think. Atah, you. You, right there. And I've been admitted into the throne room in the palace to be there with the king. Okay, yeah.
A lot of times when talking to someone like a great rabbi or something like that, you kind of believe what's expected, or sometimes what people do is they refer to them in third person as a sign of respect and a sign of covet. When you're talking to Hashem, simply as Kabbalah Homer refers to him in third person, you might want to convey the idea that you're right, that you're to yourself and right next to them, but still. It's giving up the idea, it's giving up that feeling of respect and
gaining
the feeling of closeness.
It is an extremely important remark, and this is something that you should meditate on. You should ask other people to see what they say. I think this is a fascinating idea. Yes, you speak to Rav Shishivi, you speak to him in the third person. We have sources about that. There are times when in the Tanakh people speak to kings, they speak to the king in the third person. The truth is, we do use the third person. We do use the third person. We just use the second person also. Let's take a bracha of a mitzvah. Let's translate. Baruch atah Hashem. Blessed are you, Hashem. Elokeinu melech haolam. Our God, King of the Universe. Asher Kiddushanu, translate.
The one who sanctified us?
Right. Not you who sanctified us, but he who sanctified us. Kiddushanu. The mitzvos of with his mitzvos. Not your mitzvos. It's not Kiddushanu with mitzvosecha, which you say in other places. It's a Kiddushanu. Who kidesh otanu? The mitzvah, ba mitzvot shalom. So what happened? We started off, blessed are you, and in the middle we switched to he, in the same sentence. You know, in normal grammar, you can't do that. Try writing a composition that way and see what your composition teacher will tell you. You know, you have a big red X, you know, back to the drawing boards. And you can't do it in Hebrew either. It's just as bad in Hebrew as it is in English. So the truth is that Chazal, when they made the brachos, they made the prayer, they worked in both second and third person. They used both. For a reason I'll explain to you in a moment. But his question is stronger than that, because in the Tanakh, I don't think you find the third person at all. It's all Atah. It's all Atah. When people speak to Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's all Atah. When they speak about him, he sometimes has third person. But when they're interacting with him, now, I think that part of the meaning is what I'll tell you now, but maybe it needs more as well. This really links back to what I said 15 minutes ago. Because Rocha gave us this picture. This picture with which we can sort of understand what's going on. There he revealed himself to us. He showed himself to us. Showed something about himself to us. But of course, that's not all of what he is. He goes far beyond what he showed to us. The Ator is where we're talking about what he showed us. And the third person, his, is where we're talking about what he didn't show us. Relating to what he didn't show us. In this respect, I'll teach you something which very few people know. The word mitzvah, mem, tzadi, vav, hei. Now, some of you have heard of the Atbash coding. Right? There's nothing to do with computers. Atbash. Aleph is coded with tav, beis is coded with shin, gimel is coded with resh. Right? So if I do atbash on mem tzadi, what am I going to get? Mem is 10 from the end, so it's coded with yud. Tzadi is 5 from the end, so it's coded with hey. So mem tzadi in code is yud and hey. And what are the last two letters of mitzvah? Vav and hey. So the word mitzvah is really Hashem's name, the first two letters in code, and the last two letters, yeah. This is a Kedushas Levi. What does it mean? Says the Kedushas Levi, it means like this, that when you do a mitzvah, you are connected with the Kodesh Baruch Hu on both levels. On both levels. The Vav Hei level, where you have the two letters revealed, that's like the picture. The picture that he taught us about the way he expresses himself for us. And the Mem Tzadi, which is the hidden part behind, above, the Ein Sof, beyond our ability to comprehend. That's hidden from us. In a mitzvah, you're relating to both. You're relating to both. All we see is the part he reveals, but we're relating to both. That's why the bracha of a mitzvah has both. The bracha of a mitzvah has ato, because of the part that's revealed. And it has Asher Kiddushanu, the mitzvah sov, for the part that's not revealed. And I guess it starts with the revealed, because it's the revealed that gets me to do the mitzvah. Right? The revealed is the Torah that he taught us, and my conditions of my life, which determine what mitzvahs I have to do, when I have to do them. So I start with revealed, and then I go to the part that's not revealed. So, this is where we do use second person and third person. But, to finish up his remark, when I speak to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I speak in the second person. I don't use that sign of respect of speaking the third person. And the meaning here seems to be that you have to feel connected to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you have to feel the ability to speak freely, to open yourself up, to not feel restricted, not feel on guard. And therefore you speak in the second person. The language in the Tanakh with which people speak to Kodesh Baruch Hu is very plain language. Very plain, very open, nothing special about it, no special poetry most of the time. Very straightforward, plain language. I think the idea is that you shouldn't be inhibited, you shouldn't be held back in your communication with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yes, if you're speaking to an earthly king who's worried about his honor, who's worried about how people relate to him, so then they have certain rules about how you relate to him, but that does indeed hold you back. It restricts you. I don't know how many of you know this. This is just a piece of trivia from general information. You know what the word jester, who was the jester in the court of the kings in the Middle Ages?
Clown.
Clown. This guy's a clown. Guy who made jokes. Do you know what his function was? Huh? No, not to entertain the king. The function of the jester in the court was to say criticisms of the king. Who could criticize the king? To criticize the king, off with your head. You're disloyal. No, but he could make it in fun. He could say it in jokes. That was the only way legitimate criticism of the king could be expressed. Because it was only jokes. And if it was only jokes, then no one had to take offense. The king could say it was only a joke. So he was the only one with license to speak criticism of the king. Now that's very useful. The king needs to know what people are thinking. He needs to know where people think he's gone wrong. But you couldn't say it to him straight. Because he had to maintain his power and his authority. He had to invent this kind of jester. A king who's afraid for what he has, a king who's afraid of what he's doing, has to invent these ways of shoring up his power. Now, having come this far, there are cases where in the Tanakh, people say things to HaKadosh Baruch Hu which are really pretty shocking. We have them in our tefillos. Hashem lama sishan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you sleeping? Why are you sleeping? Bekach einecho ra'e, open your eyes and see. Now, nobody's got his theology so mixed up. He thinks the Kodesh Baruch Hu goes to sleep, or he thinks the Kodesh Baruch Hu's eyes aren't open. But when bad things happen, when terrible things happen, the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't stop them and doesn't punish them. It feels as if the Kodesh Baruch Hu is asleep. It feels as if his eyes are closed. And we are permitted to do this. We're permitted to do this. To say things like this. Keili, keili, lama azatani. David HaMelech said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because Baruch Hu doesn't forsake anybody. Because Baruch Hu fills the whole of the universe all the time, every place. Nothing's empty. It's gone away and left you. But if you're not getting the help that you think you need, it feels that way. And it is appropriate to say things like that. Just don't let the feelings that you're expressing legitimately affect your ability to think straight. Both are true. Both are true. The way you feel is legitimate and it can be expressed, and the way you think has to be correct also. So the Atah invites us to express the feelings that we have without fear, without the artificial need to put up on a pedestal to the extent that we couldn't express these kinds of feelings. That's maybe a little bit about the Atah. Now, one last short idea, and I'll pick up with this again tomorrow. Mizr Hashem. The name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, that's the next word. I'm not going to give you everything about this name. But I'll just give you one idea. The root of that name means to be, to exist. Bovet. Hey, Bovet. The name means roughly that he really is. And he's the only thing that really is. Everything else isn't really is. But it's only sort of is, pseudo is, half is, not really is. What does that mean? I'll give you an analogy. Imagine you're having a dream. And in your dream, there are people and animals and automobiles and mountains and who knows what, right? What's the status of those things in your dream? Are they really is? Imagine that in the dream, you're in the dream too. Someone in the dream says to me, promise me you'll do X. And in the dream you say, I promise. Now when you wake up, you have to keep the promise? Was there a promise? To whom did you promise? To a figment of your imagination. To something you dreamed. You're real. It's not real. It's not real like you're real. It's just something you dreamed. Your brain's cooking made it happen, and your brain's cooking stopped it from happening. Its reality can't compare with your reality. Now, in a certain sense, that's the relationship between us and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hashem Baruch Hu makes us. Present tense. Makes us be. Am I really is? Not in comparison to him. He is all by himself. He's self-contained. Nothing has to make him. He really is. My is a gift from him. Continuously, moment by moment, he makes me is. So, in a certain sense, I'm not really here. Or I'm certainly not here on my own. I'm certainly not here the way he's here. That's what you gave up, Jesus. You gave up, he says, he absolutely is, and everything else only is through him. Because he makes it is. And therefore, it is relative. Relative, pseudo. Not 100% real. His is 100% real. So when you say that, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, what you feel is your ultimate dependence. Your dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for your very existence. Now imagine one of your characters in your dream. And you're beginning to stir. Coming close to morning, you're beginning to stir. And the dream is getting shaky. Wouldn't the character in the dream plead with you? Please don't wake up. Please don't wake up. Because if you wake up, I'm gone! He knew what he was, and he knew how he was related to you. He said, please don't wake up. Because when you wake up, I'm gone. You know, I'm just cooking in your brain. That's the way we have to feel because we're also a bunch of us. If you let me go, I'm gone. I'm gone. I'm nothing. So don't let me go. That's Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei expresses that ultimate dependence that our is only is there because he makes it is. Okay.
I left earlier.